Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. So I have one of my favorites back on the show. Brandon Belk is in the house, and you may remember a couple episodes ago, we spoke with Brandon about digital currencies, sort of the state of the monetary situation in the United States and in the world. Brandon was amazing in that interview and agreed to do more of these things. So we're back, and we're going to talk money. One of the things Brandon and I did is we were like, hey, what are we going to talk about this time? So we went back and forth with, you know, sort of different ways of trying to help you all and help me, because I'm going to be learning right along with you all how to think about money. And so one of the frameworks that we sort of talked about is this idea that, you know, there's the idea we earn money, there's the idea that we have to save money, and there's the idea that we have to manage money. And so we are going to try to get around to that framework, but I want you to kind of start wherever you want to start, Brandon, but I'll try to just give you some prompts here. Based on the conversation last time, let me just see if I can remember sort of where we were with this. We talked about this idea that the current monetary situation probably is not something that is going to be around for much longer and may be going away in, you know, a pretty rough way. It could be disastrous from other people's points of view. You talked about yourself being more of an optimist and was talking about, okay, so probably the way that we're currently dealing with money and the current financial industries and all of that kind of stuff are not going to remain the same. But in that, there's going to be some opportunities. And so part of what you're trying to help all of us understand is how to maneuver around this. And we talked a lot about this idea of an economy that's not really based on value, the idea that we just keep printing money, and the idea that we have some of these technologies, these digital currencies, that may solve a lot of our problems. So that's what we talked about last time. So for all of you listening now, you might want to go back and listen to that episode first with Brandon as we get into this episode. So let me just start you off. Is there anything that you want to sort of sum up from last time, and then anything in terms of your thinking, hey, we really should talk about this particular aspect now that we have some of that basic stuff under our belts? And I'm sure there's a lot of basic stuff we can still go back to, but just give us an idea of kind of what your thoughts were after that first one and where you think we should be right now and where you think this conversation should go.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, good to be back. And it feels like it's good timing, and especially for the prompts that you just gave me, because what was coming up for me as you were talking was really it reminded me of the ethos behind Next Level Human, you know, which from my perspective is about taking ownership, taking responsibility for your personal power, your own sovereignty, and how to make the most of any season, any situation, whether you would consider that a trough or a crisis, or you would consider that a triumph, you know, or a peak experience. And so, you know, looking through that lens at what we're dealing with in the financial system and the markets, you know, it's like you mentioned, you know, we are in the middle of a powerful transition. We're seeing kind of the decline of an old system that's been, you know, just more or less abused for some time now. You know, and money being printed with really no account. Since you and I last talked, actually, I think it was the week after we met, the announcement came out of the European Central Bank that they were going to unveil an unlimited bond buying program. Mm. So unlimited bond buying, like without limit. Mm. So they're just going to, so it's like, that's how they kind of phrase those headlines. You know, it has some jargon and it's hard to wrap your, you know, oh, okay, well that sounds like a good strategy if you were reading that. Mm. Right. But when you read between the lines, unlimited bond buying means that they're just going to continue. Bond is debt. Bonds are debt based securities. And so like we talked last time, the central banks will continue buying up the debt as they print more money to keep the system going. It's a debt-based society, debt-based economic model. And so, you know, like I said, it's in the news. They're continuing to do it, which eventually will lead to a liquidity crisis because you can only print more money and create more debt to an extent. And it's building up that house of cards, similar to like what we saw in 08. Yeah. So that's kind of a good recap of.
Yeah, and then let me just so I'm clear on this, because I always get a little confused on this stuff, and hopefully you listeners don't mind, but I need a lot of repeat, and, you know, so especially when it comes to a field that is not my field. So if they're doing unlimited bond buying, this means they're telling people you can buy bonds from the government. Is this right? And then they then print this money. And so based on what we talked last time, it seems like this is just more of a Band-Aid on a gushing wound. And if I learned, got it right last time, this is not going to be able to last. So every time we see that they do this, it sounds like to me that someone like you is looking at this and saying, you're just trying to put a Band-Aid on a gushing wound. You're not solving the problem. And the more we do this, the worse it's going to get. And so you're hearing, it sounds like alarm bells when you read between the lines of unlimited bond buying.
Yeah, it's the verbiage, right? Mm-hmm. Unlimited. Mm-hmm. So there's not a budget. There's not a cap. It's unlimited. Mm-hmm. And yeah, to just clarify a little bit of what I said, like, so they're buying sovereign bond, they're buying bonds from governments, mm-hmm. from countries, right? So U.S. Treasury bills would be like an example.
I see.
So that's when you have, you know, the central bank buying up bonds from the government in return for printing more money. So that's how it keeps cycling through.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of where we're at now. This I believe is it's a great time, is daunting as all that may sound. It's a great time for people to take ownership and responsibility of their own, you know, their own lives and their own, and in this case, you know, their own finances. And so hopefully, you know, these conversations can give some of the listeners the tools and, okay, well, if this is what we're facing, how can we position ourselves not only to preserve what we have, but to actually enhance our positions, right? Enhance our wealth, because this is a great opportunity for that too. Just depends on where you park the money that you do have, or the worth or the value that you do have. And so on that note, you know, like we had talked, really there's three main ways to, when it comes to facing your financial situation, and that's, you know, the earning department, right? That's one area of life where we have influence over our money is earning. Then there's saving and managing, right? So it's almost like a pipeline. The money comes in, you know, and how are we gonna do that? What's the best way? What's the best strategy? And then once it's in, how, you know, what are we doing with that to sustain it and to grow it ultimately? Mm. And so I'd love to kind of dig into that a little bit.
I would love to as well. And so let's talk a little bit about the earning side of that then. So we have this idea of we humans must earn money, we must save money, we must manage money as an individual. So now we're kind of getting into this, okay, what is an individual to do? So from my perspective, when I think about that, I think about it like, okay, well, some people go and work for someone else. Some people go and start a business, right? This is the two major ways that I see it. You're either working for someone that has a business or you're starting a business. Now, obviously, I guess, you know, this is where I'm not as savvy, but certainly with investments and things like that, you're earning some money, right? So that is a little bit where management of your money and saving of your money go into earning. So, yeah, so you kind of get this feedback loop. So the idea then is if I'm someone, and this is where I think a lot of people get afraid, right? Because if they go, well, if I'm someone who's working for someone else and the economy is potentially going to be in trouble, I don't own my job. In a sense, I'm owned by my job, and my job can get rid of me. And so, therefore, my income is gone, and then I have to go look for another place to earn money. Now, on the one hand, I've always thought, man, it'd be nice as a business owner. I've always thought it's really nice to have a paycheck that comes in, right? And but there's really, you always can lose that job. And then I guess on the other side, people go, well, business owners, that must be nice because they're making their own money, but they then own everything. So they're not just responsible for their own money, but especially if they have employees and everything else, they feel responsible for that. So there's good things and bad things about this. But I want to know from you, if you were like, okay, you know, in a perfect world, how would most of us be managing this? Would we be, you know, doing the best we can to start a business? Would we be, you know, having a side hustle like some people have where we've got a job and then we're slowly building, you know, or are you like, no, you know, having a job is, you know, maybe the best thing that you can do? Because it seems like there's some instability wherever you go. I'm wondering how you see this, if you were going to say the ideal situation for your average person is what, as it comes to earning money, what should they be thinking about?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And there's a few ways to tackle it. Ultimately, wherever, and you mentioned in an ideal world, right? So I'll dance around that framework. But as individuals, we really, the way I like to think of it, we have three types of resources ultimately. And that is money, obviously, time, and knowledge or skills, kind of the same thing. So money, time, and knowledge. And that's kind of where you have to start with self-evaluation. You know, how would you rate those three meters in yourself? You know, like how much time do I have available to me each and every day? Okay. How much money do I have available to me, and how much knowledge or skills do I have? Because that's how you're going to start to build one of the other threes that you might feel is lacking, right? And so to back up a little bit, for me, and this is my opinion, but for me, the rule number one is inspiration. You have to start with inspired action, because the energy that creates is the energy that sustains, and that's just physics, right? So if you, anything that you're, that starts with that energy of inspiration is probably going to create more feelings of inspiration, joy, expansion, right? Like down in the flow states, that sort of thing. And so what I would say is, you know, if you are feeling inspired, if there is something like calling your soul or your heart to start a business, you've got a great idea, or anything that just like feels like an inner child, yes, start there. And then from there, create a plan, and the method I use is called the heart print, right? Mm. And it kind of follows that model of starting with your vision at the top, mission, culture, goals, and all the way down to like, you know, core values and daily steps. Mm. But through that framework, it's an energetic framework, because the daily steps, as long as they carry the same energy as your vision, then that's how you build the vision. Because again, the energy that creates is the energy that sustains. So what do you do if you're not inspired? Mm-hmm. Right?
Like
what if you are in somewhat of a trough, or you're just kind of going, you know, it's been a rough 2 years, you're just trying to survive and make it, right? Make ends meet. Maybe you feel like you're in a lot of debt. And so what I would say to that person is, if you don't feel inspired, if you're not feeling that wave of energy, find someone that is. Right? Maybe it's a friend, family member, someone in your network, somebody that you know that does carry an abundance of inspiration, and then see how you can add value or be of assistance to them. Maybe they own a business. Maybe they're starting a business. And so maybe you're not the number one, you know, you're not the business owner, or you're not the one with that vision or mission, but you can still be of service based on your knowledge and skills, the time you have available, right? Or maybe the money that you have. So you can use those resources, even if you aren't feeling inspired or creative, to then help, whether it's a job or, like I said, somebody else that's starting a business. And so that's really, for me, that is the two ideal scenarios on the best possible ways to earn, because not only will you be, you're going to be earning from a place of energetic abundance. You're going to be riding a plate. You're going to be, you know, the cult, you imagine the cult, like, feel that inspiration, right? Even if it's not yours, but you're in that container, you're in that business, you're in that office where that's like, that's the culture of the company, because the guy in charge or the gal in charge carries that energy, right? They're feeling inspired. They're leading with a mission, and that permeates through the organization. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a small business. It could be just a few people, or it could be a big organization, right? If you do feel like, you know, you feel safer in like a more corporate kind of structure or environment, or that's kind of where you are now, you know, maybe you can start, maybe if you're not happy where you are now, maybe you can find a better container that has a little bit of more inspired energy behind it, more of that kind of like effervescence. Because again, that's going to, as you align to that, you're just going to have more fun. Yeah. And if you're having more fun, then making money feels easier.
Yeah. And you guys can see why Brandon and I really hit it off, because to me, this is exactly the next level human philosophy that I talk about a lot on this podcast. And I'm just going to repeat it just so, you know, it might give you things to think about, Brandon, and all of you at home. Because if you're listening to what Brandon's saying, it's a really interesting aspect of this. He's essentially saying, don't start, like, for example, I know people, you know, and actually my brother-in-law, he will laugh at this, but when I first met him, he would just sell anything, right? One day he was selling betta fish at the mall. Then he was selling scrubs. Then he was selling this other thing. Then this other thing. And, you know, he basically did not necessarily care what he was selling as long as he was making money. But one of the things that happened is then all of a sudden the betta fish weren't selling anymore, didn't want them. So he moved on to the next thing. And eventually it was dried up and he got himself in trouble, went and worked as an EMT professional for a little while. Now he's back out getting ready to start a business. And one of the things I oftentimes think about is what you were just talking about. What if, you know, he took all that skills of selling and actually did a business that he loves? And one of the things that he loves is food, and he loves cooking, and he loves that aspect of things. And so now it's really interesting for me seeing that he's kind of coming around and essentially saying, if I'm going to work, because he's a worker, he's not afraid to work, but if I'm going to work, I want to do something that I love. He loves to feed people. He loves community. He loves, he'll just have fun being around people eating his food. Like, he's the kind of guy, if you owned a restaurant, he'd go to the tables and talk to people and sit down in the old fashioned way. And if we're listening, what Brandon's essentially saying, in the next level human model, the idea is that you are a unique purpose potential, right? There's no one like you ever on the planet, nor will there ever be. Same for Brandon, same for me. And so in that, there must be something. And it sounds like this is essentially what you're saying as well. In that, there is something that most people feel called to. And even if it's not that particular thing that they can do, there is a sort of peripheral sort of zone around that thing that you may feel great joy doing, and you may not, you know, yet be doing it. And so the one thing that I think about oftentimes in times like this is I'm like, life is really interesting. It sometimes gives you the perfect thing to allow you to do the thing that you've always sort of wanted to do. And you're saying something else there, if I have it right. Not only does it sound like you're saying, find something you feel inspired to do, which I would say rolls into passion and meaning and purpose as well, but also this idea that it doesn't necessarily just have to be you, because we're all not creative types. We're all not idea types. Some of us are, you know, you and I were laughing about how I am with my schedule, right? Because we've been trying to, you know, do this thing again, and my schedule's all over the place. Well, I have someone, my sister and my assistant, who is very detail-oriented and is really, really good at keeping me on task. Well, at least she's very good at keeping tasks and putting things down, etc. And without her, I would be even more all over the place. And it sounds like what you're saying is there's something that if you can't do it for yourself, there is something that you bring to the table for other people. And to me, I love this idea of thoughts around this. Now, here's the big question that comes to this as people begin to change. How do they begin this process? And I'll tell you, I was once in a early on in my business, I had a business coaching group. And I'll tell you how he explained it. Then I want to get your thoughts on this. Because most people, they go, well, how am I going to do that? And a lot of people, there's two sort of ways or several different ways of doing this. One is I quit my job now before they fire me and I start doing this other thing. That's one way to do it, right? And the way that it was described to me is that you're on a train and you're going on this train and you essentially get off at the train station, you try to get on another train. What oftentimes can happen there, though, is that what happens is the other train can't sustain you economically. So then you have to get off at the other train track, get back on the other train, which causes all kinds of messes. So the way I've heard it explained is you're on a train and you basically start to build up this other train. This would be, you know, the idea of a side hustle, I guess. And this train is building up steam. And when it's about level with the train you're currently on, that's when you jump from one train to the next. But how would you say to people how they make this transition into this new way of doing things? Is it sort of like, okay, a five-year plan? Is it like as soon as possible because you really need to start thinking this way? Like, what's your approach there? Now, obviously, you have a whole model you walk people through when you work with them one-on-one, but give us some sort of idea of your thoughts around this or any other things that I got wrong or right in that discussion.
You said a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, basically, it depends on the person, right? Because I'll give you an example. For me, and in my past, you know, whenever I've been looking to jump trains or whatever, for better or for worse, I'm the kind of individual that, you know, early on, I realize I have to jump trains, you know, because I remember when I was starting my first business, I had a really good setup with the job that I had. And them allowing me to kind of toggle between, you know, kind of like as I grew my business, they allowed me the flexibility to work less and less. Mm. And so it was a very smooth transition. But then even in that situation for me, I found that like my energy was divided, right? If you break that word down, division, right? Two visions. So I was split between the vision of the job that I was in and serving here and doing and the skills that I had developed and the experience that I had, right? And I was good at it, you know, and I could, but as I was putting more of my energy into my vision, into my business, I started noticing that I wasn't quite at the peak performance that I was before. And again, this is just me. Mm. And so I had to make a decision where I had one leg on each train. And I had to pick one, right, in order to fully commit. And so I think whether that's, you know, close to right off the bat or maybe it's years down the road, wherever you start to feel that split or like you're both are somewhat suffering because of both of them being a part of your daily energy expenditure, that's when I knew how to decide which path to go and when to go all in. Now, there's other factors at play too, right? Like you mentioned, you don't want to get yourself in a situation where, you get overextended in debt or you can't pay your bills or anything like that. So it really takes, it's a lot of honest self-reflection, both in how you're performing and what your needs are, right? It's not just about your desires, it's also about your needs. And you have to like look at both of those things and your capacity too, because it's like, well, how many hours in a day do you have? And so for the person that, you know, maybe they work 6 to 8 hours a day in their job, but they have, and that they still have some time left over at the end of the day, and they have more capacity, you know, they have an abundance of time and there is that inspiration, there is that passion, then yeah, that would be the discipline comes in that, you know, the decision then is instead of Netflix, instead of, you know, whatever the downtime traditionally is, can you spend that time building your vision instead for a short period of time? Can you go through a season where you're slowly chipping away and building at that sustainable model that fills your heart's desires, right? And then another thing you said too about your brother-in-law and I think your sister too, right? Mm-hmm. Is your sister? This is, yeah. So, you know, there's a skill there. There's knowledge there that she has, right? And she's able to help you. She's able to come into your world and be of assistance and be able to serve you and your business. And that's a way. And, you know, so it's again, trading, whether it's time and or skills and knowledge, you know, for money. So that's a great way to earn. And that collaborative energy too, you know, it creates another beautiful thing where, you know, you kind of inspire each other. You meet her needs, she helps you with your needs, and that whole thing builds bonds and it builds relationships. And then you're doing it together. And when people feel like they're part of something, then there's even more motivation and inspiration to serve and keep growing.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that too, is when you think about the internet age and you think about, you know, loss of, you know, different sort of blue collar jobs. And a lot of people say we're going into the service economy and a lot of people are moving online and teaching. Mm-hmm. That does open up a lot of, like Jody, for example, my sister now she's my virtual assistant and she has two other people now that she's their virtual assistant. Now, prior to me, she was working in billing in a hospital. Again, a very detail-oriented sort of thing. And she took that skill and parlayed it into something else and now finds that, you know, she really enjoys that because she sees that she's at the forefront of a business and she is really making a difference versus, you know, the doctor's getting paid or that, you know, she worked at Lincoln Hospital in the Bronx and Metropolitan Hospital in New York City. And then she worked, you know, for Baptist in different places. And she didn't really get to see her sort of contributions. Now she does get to see that a little bit more. And she's, you know, getting better and better at it. She already was really good at it. But now she's building a new career. And so essentially this and it really was just me and her having a conversation of like, you know, I don't even know that Jody really understood what a virtual assistant really was at the time. But for all of you listening, there are many opportunities like that. Like I can imagine for every new service professional going in, there's a whole group of people that are required. There's marketing experts, copyright experts, you know, virtual assistants, you know, tech experts that, you know, that you're going to need help because very few of us, I'm one of these people who tries to figure it all out myself. And that has helped me, but very few people can or want to do that. And so I think the idea then is stepping into these new realms. And I like this idea of skill and developing that skill. Because to me, it's like, all right, so if you have the time, and you said something really tough there, Brandon, which is this idea of like Netflix and, you know, these other things that we want to do. And there's no judgment here. But from my perspective, when we're talking about this earning aspect of this and trying to make a jump, that's where I think your whole thing about inspiration and feeling inspired, because if you feel that passion and you feel that inspiration, then you're not going to be more interested in the, you know, 11 guys on a football field or the Kardashians, or, you know, you're going to be interested in this thing that you want to build. And I think you have to be really, really honest. And so for those of you listening to this, this is a really big piece that, you know, when I heard Brandon said, I was like, yeah, that's it. And I bet you all of you listening are like, yeah, that's it. And then we also all understand how fucking hard that is to be like, okay, you mean to tell me that I can't have my downtime and my shows and things? And what I would just say to that, and I want to see what you say to that, is I'd say, I don't know that it's that you can't have it. I think that you have to develop a new relationship with it, though, where it's like, you know, we can watch these shows anytime you want. So you build your new routine around this inspiration and this thing you're trying to build. And then when you have the time and you're just like, I really need to recover, you know, then you watch your show. So it's not a nightly show that you're watching. It's more like I'm nightly building this thing. And then on the weekend or every once in a while, I'll catch up on my shows when I can. And that's a whole different mindset. And I think the fact is that you really do have to have a hard look at yourself to say, am I that kind of person? But the thing we're talking about here is pretty challenging, because in the end, if you're someone who's working in an industry that you could potentially lose your job, now's the time. And so that's why you and I are having this conversation. So any other things about this idea of earning? Because I do think what you're talking about here is this idea of, like, do I have the time? What are my skills and how much money do I have? You know, you can build the skills nowadays with the internet. Mm-hmm. You can find a lot to get up on the skills for free. But eventually, you're going to have to become an expert in this new space. I'm one of these people that's a big fan of just, you know, jump. You know, just like leap into it, you'll figure it out. But I also understand if you don't have the time and you don't have the monetary resource to do that, it can be scary.
And it depends on if you have dependents, mm-hmm. too. That's something I didn't mention, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot easier when you're single or, you know, or maybe your kids are out of the house and, you know, you can live lean and do all that, right? But yeah, I mean, going back to what you were saying, I mean, it's, we have that time that you can take that downtime. And well, I guess the best way to look at it is there's nothing wrong with those things. Mm. First of all, there's no judgment, right? Anybody listening walks away and they don't change at all. Like, there's nothing wrong with same level human. Mm. But if you want to be next level human, to get to that net, right? Because if you do the same thing every day, you're going to stay at the same level. And that's okay. Maybe you love the level. Maybe this is your level. And that's great. But for anybody that wants to go to a new level or wants to go to a next level, then you do that. Then with that discipline, you know, putting those priorities in place where it's like, okay, you go to your job, you know, and instead of coming home, maybe, and then eat dinner, whatever, and instead of, you know, immediately watching Netflix or doing whatever you did in the downtime, maybe just push that an hour or two. Just, you know, just like, and you could schedule it, you know, just, you could still schedule it for, you know, to however much you feel like you need and kind of toggle that. But at least you're starting somewhere. At least you're starting something new, even if it's just an hour a day reading on a, you know, material on a new skill, or, you know, finding people that you can connect with, that you feel like you can serve and add value to, right? And put your passions and your knowledge and your skills to use in that way, or your time. And so I think that's kind of the best way to look at it, you know, right? It's how bad do you want it? And the more you want it, the more inspired you are, the more committed you are, the quicker it'll happen.
Yeah. And one thing I'll add to that, just to kind of complete this aspect of this conversation, is that I do think our interests give us clues about what we're inspired about. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that all of us can pay close attention to what we find ourselves gravitating towards. What are we watching, you know, and the things that we are, and then look for clues about what could I do that gets me as excited about sitting down and watching, like, you know, reality TV glass blowing competitions or whatever it is. You know, like me and my girlfriend, she'll watch glass blowing and cupcake wars, and she likes all these artistic sort of competitive types of things. And I do think what you're interested in gives you clues. And I think because you're talking about inspiration, so the idea then would be like, what would I love to do? Like, maybe if you're so into, for example, watching, you know, baking shows and cooking shows, maybe it's becoming, you know, someone who goes online and actually shares recipes and cooks in your kitchen. And maybe it's moving from more of the consumer to partly or fully the creator, and or looking and saying, well, I want to see if I can work for that show, or I want to see if I can find someone who's doing this that I can be more involved with. And so I do think that sort of gives you clues. And I like what you said too, Brandon, because again, I agree, this isn't not for everyone, but there are people listening to this, and a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are like, I feel very hungry and driven to do something that I can build for myself. And so I think this conversation is mostly for that particular person. So, this idea of then earning, there are many different ways to go about this. And let me just get some yes and no questions for you just real quick. So would you say, which is better? Would it be better for people to, and I know it's probably going to depend on the person, but would you say it's better to have a side hustle, have your current job, especially if you're not time rich, you know, and cash rich, that you basically stay with your job and build up your side hustle? Or would you say, no, they should just leap into the next thing? Like, how would you say that for most people, assuming this is a person that is not time and cash rich?
Yeah, I would say, again, it depends on the person, but what comes up for me is it doesn't get talked about enough. There's a slippery slope to the side hustle piece. Mm-hmm. It's great in theory, but oftentimes people get focused on that new shiny object when they could take, and maybe it's just double, maybe there's more opportunity with the job that you're in.
Yeah.
And if it's, so it really depends on what work you're doing for your job. If it's like your security guard or something like that, right? There may not be, you know, more gold to tap into in that field. Right. But if you're in sales or if you're in something like that, like maybe instead of having a side hustle, you've got experience over here. You can make more money. It is possible, whether you just put in a little bit more time or negotiate like a different type of payout structure or whatever it is, like in order to use that to get to your goals. And so it really depends on your job situation as to whether the side hustle piece could serve you or distract you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about this idea of saving. Now, I'm very curious to see how, because I have historically been pretty bad with saving and managing. I shared that with you. And I used to not be able to earn. Now I earn very well and still struggle with saving and managing a little bit. And I think we all have to kind of look and be like, oh, I earn great, you know, or I save great, or I manage great. I'm one of these people who earns great. And the other thing is I'm not really good at the other two. But when we talk about savings, I always hear things from financial people. I'm like, oh, you know, you should have, you know, 3 to 6 months of cash in an account, you know, in case, you know, that there's an emergency or something like that. And then, you know, like, okay, there's 401ks, there's SEP IRAs, there's, you know, different places you can put your money that I guess people would say is partly saving, partly investing. I want to know your sort of take on what saving money actually means. Like, what are we really talking about when we're talking about, you know, saving? Am I really saving money if I'm just sticking it into a savings account, for example? Is that really saving money, or am I doing some harm to myself? Would I be better off, like, you know, pulling out cash and sticking under my mattress? Would I be better off, like, you know, what would you say are the things we need to think about and be aware of around saving money?
Yeah, well, you know, the way that you just illustrated is you can see where we're going right after saving, which is managing. And they're kind of two in the same, but a little bit different. And so I'll do my best to kind of differentiate between the two, and then we'll join them together. So saving, essentially, you've got to, like you said, you've got your earning, and then the saving is what you don't spend, right? So it's the money that you have available. That is the money saved. So it doesn't really, at this point in the conversation, it doesn't matter where it's going. We're not talking about that yet. So it's the money you earn, and then the amount that you hold on to that you have to make moves with. Mm-hmm. That is what you save versus like the money that's immediately going to rent, immediately going into your gas tank, immediately going to your pantry or whatever food right necessities. And so the idea of saving is really it brings in the discipline to live within your means. Mm. You know, and then now we're starting to get into like what your goals are, right? What's your vision? Because that's going to also determine how much you would probably need to save when you account for your timeline as well, right? Yeah. And so best way to start saving, you know, because it's the tricky thing about saving is there's a never-ending list of obligations. Mm. Right. Most people just don't accidentally wake up at the end of the month with a surplus of money. If you do, great, then you've set yourself up really well. But typically, no matter, it's like, you know, and they've done studies on this, no matter how much people earn, it's like they'll still end up with, you know, relatively the same kind of amount or, you know, percentage of their income left, even if they were to earn less or more.
Yeah.
You know, because if we don't have a plan for the money that we're saving, it will turn into money spent.
Yeah.
And so the way to do that is, and we talked about this a few weeks ago about you've got the profit first business model, and or, you know, people out there that may be familiar with the book The Richest Man in Babylon talks about paying yourself first. A lot of financial advisors talk about that too. Pay yourself first. Well, what does that mean? You know, because it sounds kind of cheeky, but essentially what paying yourself first means is you set a minimum amount aside that you will not spend or send to other people. So instead of paying others, you're paying yourself by sequestering that amount. And a good rule of thumb to start, if you're, well, I don't have anything left over, I don't, you'd be surprised. Like if you set that amount away first, you'll find ways to get by on whatever's left, right? But if you do it in reverse, if you just wait till the end of the month to pay yourself last with whatever's left over, like I said before, chances are there won't be, right? So taking, you know, if it's just 10% even of whatever you're earning, if you just start with 10%, and this is what the book Richest Man in Babylon talks about, is taking 10% of what you earn and just store and saving that. And then again, we'll talk about what to do with it. But that's step one, saving that. And then if you can, obviously, the more you save, the faster you'll get to your goals. So maybe you start at 10, but then you're like, well, I can do this. This is easy, you know, because you're earning more or whatever. And you're like, well, what happens if I bump this up to 20%, you know, or 30%? Or if you're, like I said, if you're single, you're living lean, what if it's 50%? Because the goal at the end of the day, regardless of what like your individual visions or goals are, ultimately it's financial freedom, I would imagine. If you're listening to this conversation, we all kind of would be nice to consider ourselves financially free.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Right. Well, the simplest way, it's almost like a mathematic equation. You are financially free when your assets pay for your lifestyle instead of your income. So when your assets that are generating income, whether it's real estate or, you know, dividends that you have with stocks or crypto or anything like that, that's paying you some sort of passive, it's spitting off income, right? For you holding that asset. If you are receiving money by holding that asset, then that's considered, you know, when you can use that money to pay for your lifestyle instead of your job, instead of your income. Now you can keep working and you can, so the idea there is, In a perfect world, in a financially free world, all of our income would go into assets and the assets would pay for the lifestyle that we wish to experience. And the sooner that you can, and it kind of, you know, it's all relative. So the sooner that your assets can pay for, maybe it's not an extravagant lifestyle at first. Right? Maybe it's just maybe because the amount you start with whatever assets you have, if that's paying for the lifestyle, you're still financially free. And then you increase your quality of life, you increase your lifestyle as that money continues flowing into more assets. So you stay financially free while expanding your lifestyle. That's the goal, right? It's not always easy to get to.
It's time to talk about one of our sponsors of today's episode, AG1 by Athletic Greens. Now, many of you have heard me say this before, but I am not a fan of vegetables, which I know is funny given I've been in the health and fitness industry for so long. I blame my mother and father for this when I was a kid. What they would do was essentially take the broccoli, the Brussels sprouts, the spinach, the collard greens, and just steam them. No salt, no fat, no taste whatsoever, just these bitter greens. And so I developed a distaste for a lot of different vegetables, which has stayed with me into adulthood. One of the things I've done to mitigate that is use a greens powder pretty much ever since greens powders have come out on the market. And I've tried every single one. They started out tasting like swamp water. I found a few that I really like the taste, but recently, one that I have been taking for a very long time, as you all know, I wear a continuous glucose monitor. I found that it was actually spiking my blood sugar because probably the tapioca starch in it, which some people don't respond to tapioca starch with elevated blood sugars. I was. And so it sent me on a mission to find another one. And one of my friends turned me on to AG1 by Athletic Greens. And I've heard about Athletic Greens and AG1 for quite some time. I just never tried it. And now that I have tried it, I have become a huge fan, so much so that I partnered with Athletic Greens and AG1 to sponsor this podcast. Now, let me tell you what happened here. After I saw that my blood sugars were spiking, my friend gave me a couple samples of AG1. I began using those and testing the blood sugar and found there was no spike.
The other thing I found is that AG1 is interested in its taste profile. It's very neutral. The one I was taking before was a little sweet. I really loved it. But this one is very neutral, which actually suits me because what I found is I can actually not only take this first thing in the morning in water and have it taste very neutral, almost like there's nothing there. I can also add it into my protein shakes, which means now I'm getting double the greens than I was getting previously, because I add this right into my protein shakes and it does not change the flavor of the shake at all. The other thing I realized once I started looking at the label is that this product is not simply a greens product. It also is a multivitamin, multimineral. It also has fiber, which acts as a prebiotic. It has probiotics in it, and it has functional mushrooms, which act as adaptogens in it. That's four different products essentially in one. And I've been taking mushrooms for some time. I stopped taking them now because now I have this in my greens. I have also taken my multivitamin and make this my multivitamin. So I'm actually saving money, and this is going to save you money as well. The product AG1 is also NSF certified. And you might say, Jade, what does that mean? The National Sanitation Foundation is a foundation that essentially does testing on products to make sure there are no harmful substances, no persistent organic pollutants, no heavy metals. Now, this costs money to do. AG1 and Athletic Greens has spent the money on this. They spend money on making sure that the product that you are getting is good quality without contamination in it. And you might say, well, Jade, isn't this true of all products? And actually, no, it is not. If you ever follow some of the news in this area through consumer labs and other things that do testing on these products, you'll see that many of them will have trace levels of things like mercury and cadmium and lead and things like that in them because they're not doing this testing. So this is an extra piece of insurance for us. The other thing I love about this product that I learned as I was doing my research on it is that this is the 52nd tweak or adjustment they have made to this product in their existence. AG1 has been tweaked 52 times. Now you might say, well, Jade, why would they be doing that? And the reason why is because they continue to improve. We know that science is evolving. We know that it's not just about more nutrients. It's about balanced nutrients. It's about the Goldilocks effect of this. And they are constantly learning, as we all are, and then constantly adjusting their product to taste better, to be more efficient and effective in delivering the nutrients. It acts as an antioxidant. It acts as a multivitamin. It's a prebiotic, a probiotic, and an adaptogen all in one. They have mastered this over several iterations of this particular product. And so I am a huge fan right now of AG1 and Athletic Greens, and I'm hoping that you will check this out. It's time for all of us to reclaim our health and arm our immune system with convenient daily nutrition. And AG1 does that with just one scoop in a cup of water every single day. That is all you need. There is now no longer a need for a million different pills and supplements to look after your health. All you need is this particular one. It really clears the stage to simplify your supplement regime. To make it easy for you, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/next level. That's athleticgreens.com/next level to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Check out AG1. I love it. I know you're going to love it. And I'm so happy that they are on board to sponsor the podcast as well. Thanks so much. Check out AG1, athleticgreens.com/next level. And let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and that's a great way to say it. It reminds me of some friends I know sort of early on when Airbnb was coming along, where they had had a house that they were living in and paying mortgage on. And one of them in particular I know left that house, got himself like a cheap apartment, moved into the apartment. Now, of course, it's a single guy. OK, so like you said, it depends. And then started renting his house out for more than he was paying in rent in Airbnbs. And this is the way he sort of looked at that equation. And it worked out well for him. And he got a couple more Airbnb properties after that. But it makes me think of sort of this idea of like, oh, I need to essentially, I have this house. It's not really an asset if I'm paying mortgage on it. This is what he was essentially thinking to himself. It's not necessarily making me money right now. Maybe over the long run, if it appreciates, it will. But he was like, I can go and live in a much cheaper apartment, rent this thing out for more money. And that's how he began to think about this equation a little bit. And so I really like this, but let me just repeat back just so I have it and all of you have it. So if I'm someone, let's say, that has $5,000, is making $5,000 a month, let's say, and I decide, you know, I go, you know what, I want to set aside, let's say, $1,000. I want to be pretty aggressive. I want to set aside $1,000 a month. And you maybe right now I'm spending all $5,000 of that dollars. But it sounds like what you're saying, and I like this model more than just getting down into budgeting and stuff like that, because if I put that $1,000 aside right away and I don't see it, and all I see is like, you know, maybe I create another account where that $1,000 automatically goes to. And so now my account that I used to look at psychologically, I used to see $5,000 come in. Now I'm seeing $4,000 come in. Psychologically, as a human, I'm going to adjust everything I do, right? Because now I'm working with $1,000 less. And this sounds like, to me, at least the way my brain works, the way that it would work for me. And I know this idea, you mentioned profit first in business. One of the things that changed business for me was the same idea, that the idea of profit first. This is a book written by a guy named Mike Michalowicz, if you guys are interested in it. But essentially what he said is, he said, most people go, let me just do the business, and then at the end of the month, I'll see what my profit is. Profit first says, no, I want a business with X profit. You decide ahead of time. So I want a business with 10% profit, which means at the end of the first month of that business, I basically see what I made, right? And then I take 10% of that. And that basically then goes into a profit account that I don't get to see, and I make it a little difficult for me to have access to. And I repeat that again and again, and I will adjust psychologically how I manage the rest of my money. And this, I really like this idea of saving, if that's kind of how you're thinking of it. And of course, you can adjust, right? So I guess, you know, if you're someone like me, I'd probably be very aggressive at first and then, you know, dial it back. Or you can be, you know, not so aggressive and then dial it up. But the idea is, start putting something away, and you'd be surprised, to your point, how fast you'll start changing things and maybe going through all your subscriptions that you never looked at, and, you know, cutting some of those out. Maybe you're getting less coffee. Maybe you're doing other things as a result of seeing that. But meanwhile, you're building up this money over on the side to allow you to do maybe a side hustle or another business one day, or invest in a rental property or whatever it is. But if you don't do that, then perhaps you're stuck in this thing that most of us are stuck in, where I'm just time for money earning and I'm really not saving anything. And to me, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, even if you're someone who has debt, right, this still works, because I can still just go, okay, I can still pay off my debts. It'll figure itself out. In other words, if you put a certain money aside and you put too much aside, you can essentially then adjust that. I would say that from my perspective, I know for me, I don't know how everyone else works, but I would need to not have easy access to that money. So to me, it wouldn't be like, if I have a Wells Fargo account and I've got two accounts and I open up that Wells Fargo account and see, here's my, you know, profit first account, or pay myself first account, and then here's my regular account where my income comes in. I would probably separate those out and get, like, you know, a Bank of America account, you know, separate from a Wells Fargo account. But I don't know how you see that, but just psychologically, that's how I would be doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe you just don't have a debit card for that account, right?
Yep.
Or you don't carry it and put it in a drawer or whatever. You know yourself, and you know your blind spots, and so addressing that, obviously.
Let me ask you this, yeah, too. What about digital currencies? Would you consider that? Because we're going to get ready to get into management, which I'm imagining you're going to say that's probably a better time to talk about the management of money. But would you ever consider, you know, putting that money, that savings, into digital currencies? Or is that more managing? Because, I mean, digital currencies are they fluctuate like crazy right now. They're not that solid. It seems like it's more of an investment opportunity. But I don't know. I'm just curious.
Yeah. We'll definitely expand on that in the next piece. you know, that's where a lot of mine goes. Mm. But that's how I manage it. That's how I manage my savings. And there's an allocation that's not, you also don't want to be all in on any one out. You want to have lots of buckets, or at least I do. I like having lots of buckets. You know, it's like having a table with 100 legs. It's much more stable than a table with 2 legs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we'll touch on that. But one more piece on the saving too, you know, you brought up debt, and that's, I'm so glad you did, because I know a lot of people it's like, well, I've got this debt, and a lot of people say, a lot of financial guys will say, hey, you need to pay off your, you know, get debt free, Dave Ramsey, right? Mm-hmm. Get your debt going away, and then start saving. And it really depends on the interest rates. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of throw this out there, you know, it depends on the debt. There's good debt and there's bad debt. And good debt, just real quick, good debt buys assets, bad debt buys liabilities. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to get into debt, if you're going to use debt, if you're going to borrow money, it's ideal. It's healthy. Good debt is borrowing money or using debt to buy assets. Mm. If you use it to buy liabilities, then it's like quicksand.
Yeah.
So when it comes to evaluating, you know, your saving versus how much you're paying off on your debt, well, it depends on that we're getting into the managing money part too, right? Because the money that you save, well, do I pay debt off or do I invest?
Yeah, this is a perfect transition, because this is really where you're trying to manage. Yeah.
What do I do with the money that I'm saving? Well, let's look at the interest rates. And that's something that I, you know, whenever I work with people, that's what we look at. It's like, well, you know, if it's a credit card that's 30% interest, you know, then it might be a good idea to,
you got
to
take care of that.
Because that's a big hole in the bucket. Mm. But if it's a car payment, you know, or maybe you know, depending on when you got your mortgage, you know, if it's something that's less than 5%, honestly, if it's less than inflation, it's actually a pretty good debt, right? Because the money, if you had it in cash and inflation is 9%, then you've got a 9% hole in your cash bucket. But if you've got debt in a house at to the tune of 5%, right, then you can. It might be better to just keep paying what you're paying, right? If it's a low interest rate, because you can take, instead of putting all of your savings to tackle debt, you can go out and have your savings earn a higher interest rate than what your debt interest is.
Yeah, and let me give all of you listening, I think it's a personal example. Tell me if this example, but I still have medical school loan debt. The interest rate on that loan is 2%. Mm-hmm. I have just paid the minimum on it since, right? And just, I'm like, I'm not worried about it, because it's 2% interest. Why am I going to use my income when it's such a low interest rate? So I pay the minimum on that, and I've used, maybe you'll tell me this isn't smart, but that my way of looking at it is like, I'm not worried about that. That is 2% interest rate. I can earn more money by just sticking that in an account somewhere. So I am not going to take extra money and try to pay that debt down. So ever since I've had that debt, because the interest rate was so low, because a lot of people are like, you still haven't paid off your medical school loans? I won't. I'll just keep paying the minimum on that always, because the interest rate is so low. Is that smart or not smart?
That's a great example. Mm-hmm. And that, I, in my opinion, that supports what I was saying, you know, because you're right. You can take, instead of paying all, giving all your excess savings to tackle that 2% debt rate, right? You can go out and take that money, and as long as you're earning more than 2%, then you're net positive.
Yeah, like what is it in the stock market? 3-6%, you know, you'll earn, you know. So to me, that's kind of how I looked at that. So that's interesting. So let me just repeat that real quick. So it sounds like if you're someone that has a very high interest rate debt, then that may be something you want to begin to consider. And there are certainly workarounds, refinancing things, you know, other ways to get, you know, to get things done. But you probably want to focus on that. However, if it's less than inflation, then you might want to sort of go, I can pay the minimums on these debts. I don't need to tackle them so far, and use my money, you know, in the money management sector to hopefully get greater return. So let's talk about that. And this is something that you and I talked about a little bit before, but with my limited knowledge, the way I look at this is, I'm like, okay, so there's real estate. I can invest in that. I can, you know, invest in precious metals and things like that. And this is me more thinking what I learned from you last time, where you were like, you know, educating us on, like, honestly, you kind of want to invest in things that have, you know, some real value, right? So like, you know, I'm thinking, okay, so those things have value. What else can I invest in? I definitely can invest in, and this is where I like to invest most of my money, although it's risky, is businesses, because I'm like, if I can get more earning potential, so, you know, maybe a business or a business idea I can invest in. What other areas, you know, digital currencies, right, which is something I'm sort of learning from you. I can invest in that. I can invest in the stock market. And I know this isn't the whole thing on managing money, but ideally, I would imagine if you're managing a business or you're managing a household or you're managing money, you want to do it in a way that is efficient, that makes things work for you rather than against you, and manage things in a way that help you get more efficient as you go along. So I would imagine that the management conversation really starts talking about where am I putting extra income and how am I paying off debt and, you know, all the sort of conversations around I've got debt here, I got this amount saved, I've got, you know, this amount coming in. Now how do I work all of this to make my situation better?
Exactly. Yeah. And it ultimately, I know this is going to sound cliche, but it starts with your goals. You know, it starts with your goals, it starts with your capacity. You know, where am I in relation to where I want to be? And, you know, and that's going to determine, and like I said, it's a lot of this is going to sound like what we talked about in the earning piece. You know, what feels inspiring, right? Are you really into real estate, right? Are you really into business? Some people aren't. Some people just don't have time. Right? Maybe they love what they do. They love their earning vehicle, right? And they're all in on that. And so for them, you know, and they don't have as much interest in the managing. It's obviously important, but those, you know, for some, it may be like more of a passive thing or delegate it, right? Or, you know, it just depends on what buckets are going to serve their goals the most efficiently and effectively. Yeah. And so that's where we kind of start is, okay, well, let's start with those. What are your goals? What's your capacity? Where are you? And then here are the options. Here are the buckets. And another big thing that plays into this, whether you're managing it yourself or finding someone to partner with to help you with that, where's the opportunity? Right? Because it everything goes in cycles.
Yeah, this is a big one that you and I kind of talked about last time. Like, where is the opportunity? Now, I know a lot of people are like, is the opportunity in the stock market? Is the opportunity in digital currencies? Is it in real estate? Like, what's the deal with that?
And that's why, you know, like today, the day that we're having the conversation, this answer is probably going to be different than if somebody listens to this in 2-3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, so for today, real estate, I mean, there's always deals to be found, right? Like if it falls out of the sky, you know, there's this like your dream home is in a foreclosure situation and you have an opportunity, like,
yeah.
You know, there are situations like that. But in general, you know, I think most of us can agree that the housing market is maybe just past a peak, right? Or kind of still in somewhat of a bubble territory. I know that's starting to change now. But, you know, on the flip side, the stock market, in addition to that, the stock market is also, according to Warren Buffett's indicator, right, his metric for valuing stocks in the market as a whole, it's overvalued by over 200%.
Yeah, that's nuts, man.
So, you know, and I don't know the exact number for homes, you know, but compared to like, I know rents compared to a couple of years ago are up, you know, 20 to 40%, right? And so—
So this is giving me a clue as to why you are more in the digital currency space, right? Because it's sort of like, all right, if we're, you know, and of course there's some, you know, debates that always go on here. But if we're in this place where we're like, okay, the housing market's overvalued and the stock market's overvalued for now, and it might be different in, again, 2-3 years from now, then what are the places that aren't overvalued or places that make more sense to put my money?
Right. So that's a great question. And even in the digital currency world, Bitcoin, which is kind of like the king of all digital currencies right now, Bitcoin is, I mean, it's 5 years ago, it was, you know, a couple hundred dollars, right? Your few hundred dollars, maybe a thousand. Now it's 20,000. So again, it's like people have already, even now that it's down, you know, I know in the last year, it's people have watched it, you know, I think closing out last year, it was close to 70,000 and now it's close to 20. And so it looks like it's a good deal, but again, people have all, it's already gone from 0 to 20,000. Mm-hmm. And so, but there are other digital currencies. So Bitcoin compared to its all-time low is still relatively high. And so
But if you're getting in now, right? And I think that's the discussion, right? It's sort of like, okay, well, who has, you know, if you're getting in now, it might not look like such a good deal, but there's other digital currencies that look more like Bitcoin used to look than Bitcoin looks now, which is what you spend all day, every day sort of looking into.
Absolutely. And again, this, and whether it's like what we're saying right now, they're in the digital currency realm or it's other, wherever you're looking, what is its value in relation to its all-time low and all-time high, right? And the closer it is to its all-time low, the more upside, right? So now
so it's better. So Bitcoin's better now at 20,000 if you're just getting in than it was getting in at 70,000.
It was, yeah, but much worse than if you had gotten in at 500.
Exactly.
You see what I mean?
Makes sense.
And so maybe Bitcoin, you know, to get back to its all-time high, it could triple or maybe quadruple, right? And that's kind of the upside there. But like when you look at some of these other currencies, you know, some of the smaller ones that we've talked about last time, they're down 90% right now from their all-time high. They're more towards their all-time low.
So those are the ones we want to be looking at.
All upside, yeah. Right? And so now, like I said, there's a caveat there because you don't want to go, you can't just only focus on the upside, potential upside, right? You don't want to just go searching for the ones that are the most undervalued because some of those might not make it.
Yeah. And this goes to the discussion we had. This is why all of you need to go listen to the first sort of discussion, because you had laid out a really beautiful way of looking at, you know, what we should be thinking about that was based more on the total value and what this thing brings to the picture and who they're involved with and who's backing them. And there was a whole formula you used to make decisions about digital currencies that go way beyond just how close they are to their, you know, their low or their high.
Right. And those are all the metrics that we have to consider. So when we're evaluating what to do with our money, you know, okay, well, where's the opportunity first, right? And we call that alpha in investing. If you ever hear that investing term, mm-hmm. seeking alpha, or what's the alpha? That's like, what's the best opportunity? And so if you're somebody that really, like, everything I'm saying right now is like exciting and you feel that inspiration like I did, you know, because going back, you know, this is I'm here because I followed an interest and got and the knowledge and skills to be able to have this conversation. So that's another example of building and going that path. But anyway, you know, if this is lighting you up, then like, yeah, those are the things then you're gonna enjoy coming home from your job and researching these things, researching these assets, looking at the market, seeing where the opportunities are, and then wherever the opportunity, okay, this one has this much potential upside. Well, let me dig into the team. Let me dig into the organization. What utility do they bring to the table, right? And so as you develop that knowledge base, you're going to be a more effective and efficient investor. If it doesn't feel good, right? If it's not if your eyes kind of go cross and smoke starts coming out of your ears, you know, but it's still important. Well, that's why it's important to go find somebody, just like when with the earning piece, right? Find somebody that does make you feel inspired in the area of managing money and go partner with them and delegate that, right?
Yeah. It's similar like hiring me if you're dealing with metabolism stuff versus hiring you if you're like, you know, maybe you don't want to know the ins and outs of metabolism, you just want the result. So same thing with finances. We'd go hire someone like you. We don't want to know the ins and outs necessarily. It's just not our thing, but we'll hire someone who eats, lives, and breathes that. And actually, one thing that I want to just touch on real quick here is that and I don't know about, but I hear a lot about, you know, different companies who do investment, right? And what you hear a lot about is there's different things where people go, I'm dealing with, like, I forget some of the names, but like, you know, I'm dealing with this investment company and I just give them my money. And, you know, but then you hear about like, well, they're taking fees and they're doing all these kinds of things. And are they really paying attention or are they just using a gross formula across the board for everyone and not necessarily taking into account, you know, Jade Tita's way of looking at it? And then we have like the old fashioned 401ks and SEP IRAs and all these kinds of things. And so I just want to say we're after kind of talking to you and then just some of my naive approaches to this, let me tell you how I see this. And then I just want you to set us straight on this. So to me, I don't like the idea of giving my money, never really have liked the idea of giving my money to, you know, some, you know, off the shelf, you know, big corporate entity that's sort of like one of these investment firms. And, you know, I've had friends who work for these investment firms are always like, oh, you should come work with me. Something about it just doesn't feel right. Cause I just feel like I'm just going to be a cog in the wheel. You're going to apply a formula. You know, you're not necessarily going to understand you know, how I am. And I'm also one of these people that my biggest passion is I'm always looking to find a business or start another business to sort of make money. So I don't love those. And I also don't love the idea of someone taking 8% of my money that I don't really know what they're doing with it. And I don't know if, you know, how guaranteed I am to get a return on that. So I don't love that idea. However, I do think I would love the idea of like having someone who really understands Jade, really understands his strengths and dysfunctions around money, and is really working, you know, closely to try to, you know, match his lifestyle. Like, you know, maybe like, well, I know Jade likes to spend and is always looking for a business, and he doesn't. He's one of these guys that if he loses, you know, $50,000, it's not that big of a deal to him. He's going to keep looking for the next thing. And then at the other time, I don't like the idea of SEP IRAs and 401ks, even though I have those as well, partly because I feel like, well, if Brandon's telling us that, you know, the stock market is overvalued and all of that kind of stuff, then, you know, I know people oftentimes say, well, it's never gone down, you know, but I just go, yeah, is it, could I grow my money faster and or is my money at risk in those places? And so that's my naive way of looking at that, and I'll admit, embarrassingly so, that oftentimes keeps me from doing anything other than just trying to find businesses and earn more. So as to kind of finish up this conversation, how do you see those things? Are you just like, Jade, you need to rethink that? Am I right in places, wrong in places? Like, how would you help us understand this? Because I think that's most people who are listening to this right now. I would imagine most people are like, well, I've got a 401k or I've got a SEP IRA because I this is what I'm doing with my money and it's in the stock market and I can't necessarily go wrong there. And part of me has just never felt comfortable with that. I don't know why. I just don't.
Yeah. Well, I have an idea of why maybe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're anything like me, it sounds like, you know, there's a few things that I feel like I have in common with you. It feels sterile. First of all, it's like a big box that like, this is the arrangement. This is the fee structure. This is the basket of things that we invest in. These are the ETFs. It's just, here's the index fund. And it's just this automatic, there's no soul. There's no excitement. There's no inspiration. It's just like sterile.
No real education.
It's just put it here. It's always gone up. Here's the fee, pay it, retire like everybody else. You know, and for some people that feels safe, right? If it just depends on how you're wired. For some people, it's like maybe, you know, like, and again, it's funny that you see that a lot in corporate America, right? Those benefits that come along with that. It's all very, hey, here, I'm going to give you this. That's the safe path. It's predictable. It's been done. Millions of people have done it. And this is the result that they typically get. And people that want that kind of assurance, that might be the better option. But it's not the sexiest. It's not the most exciting, right? Or at least not for maybe people like us, right?
And
so, you know, what's beautiful about this time that we're in is, you know, you hear, and this is kind of bridging the connection to more the digital currency world, decentralization. You know, we're experiencing that not just in the economy, not just in currencies, but in just as a culture, as an ethos, like. This, you know, we talked about sovereignty before at the beginning of the call and doing and, you know, and honoring what excites you and following that energy, right? So decentralized investing, decentralized money management, right? Finding somebody that can speak to Jade's unique interests and goals, right? You don't fit into a box on a spreadsheet right? Because you're, like you said earlier in the conversation, you're uniquely you, and you have unique goals and you have unique risk tolerance and you have, right? And so I feel like, you know, what are all the options available and which ones are going to light you up the most and get you the most engaged, whether you're doing it actively or passively. And so for you, you know, you don't have to go with those big, with like the more traditional route and paying the fees. There's other options available. If that doesn't excite you, if you don't feel like it's worth it, right? Because they maybe it's not as tailored to your needs. And also, you know, they're kind of limited in what they can invest in and what they cannot, right? The larger the company, the larger the business, the larger the investment firm, You know, the less wiggle room, the less flexibility you have in where that, in what those buckets are.
Right? Yeah, so they're going to be less likely to get into digital currencies, perhaps.
And less likely to do that. Less likely, if they do give you exposure to precious metals, it's not the physical kind. It's the money, it's the paper metals. And I don't know how, you know, I'm sure people out there are aware that, that there's a difference, right? Because
I wasn't aware of that.
The commodities exchange, right? If you go on, you know, like you have, maybe you have a TD Ameritrade account or something like that, that allows you to buy, you know, if you're investing in gold and silver as if it were a stock, that is a derivative of the actual metal. And just like the central
versus
banks,
getting the actual metal. I've always wondered how that works when you invest in precious metals. Like, are they going to send me a bunch of gold in the mail? I've never done it. You know what I mean?
And that's what's important. And we, you know, if we can pick this up next time too, but if you are going to invest in precious metals, this will be a fun way to end it. But you know, when we talk about what's happening in the macro economy, and we're not so, you know, we're realizing the dollar is overvalued. We realize inflation is running hot. Where do we put our money? You know, what if we look at Sri Lanka, we look at these banks where they're locking people's accounts. Canada did it. You know, if you want to know where to put your money that is the most safe, if you're that kind of investor, like I want it safe for now. Because like I said, we're coming up in a unique time where I think, you know, yes, have some of the currencies of the future, right? But also you want to have liquidity, because I mentioned the liquidity crisis earlier.
Yeah.
So whatever cash you do have, you know, if it's cash, if it's gold, if it's silver, like it's here on the table.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Right. Look. Yeah. And in addition to that, you know, if it's digital currencies, you've got your own hard wallet. So you might have heard that. This right here, it's like I've got digital currency there, I've got cash there, I've got metals there. So if all the banks in the world shut down,
I'm good. Yeah.
Right. And so to answer your question about paper metals or trading metals, a lot of times what these investment banks will do is you say, hey, I want to purchase, you know, $1,000 worth of gold, they'll just print you an IOU. And give you or kind of issue a certificate that says, hey, this is worth $1,000 in gold, but you're not getting possession of the metal. And just like the central banks print money, they can print those certificates. That's how they have suppressed the value of precious metals. So silver and gold are actually well undervalued compared to what they should be in relation to the dollar, because they just keep diluting the supply through paper certificates.
So this is interesting. So you literally have silver and gold here, and so I imagine you could either have it at your place or it's in some vault somewhere, but you can go and get access to it.
A little bit of both. Yeah. And that's again, it's like we have all these buckets, and for me, precious metals, yes, they're undervalued, so it is a good investment from that. It will appreciate in value whenever that day comes. But so there's an upside to it, but there's also, it's like, well, what if the grid goes down? A lot of people worry about that, you know, or worst case scenarios, right? If you want to cover all of your bases, well, what happens if the grid goes down? What happens if you don't have, you know, cash or whatever? Well, or if the dollar goes away, like you want to ask yourself these questions. If the dollar goes away, am I good? Right. If the grid goes down, am I good? No. Okay. What do I need to do to at least be able to survive a few weeks to a month, however long it is, in the absence of those resources?
Yeah. This is something we should talk about next time we talk, because I would love to, you know, I'm not a doomsday scenario person, and I don't necessarily think you are either. I think we're both, you know, but, you know, to me, I would love, like, I'm one of these people, it's like, even though I'm not like that, I do have, like, I have a, you know, what do you call it? A go pack, you know, like when I was in LA, if there was a big earthquake, I had a breakout pack that had everything I needed in it. I never thought about that from a monetary perspective. Maybe that's something we should talk about next time, about what do you need in this emergency monetary kit. And then I would really like to get into, okay, like this idea, I love this already. Like, just seeing the way your mind works, you're like, look, I've got my cash, I've got my digital wallet, I've got this, and I'm sure you've got different investments in other places that we can go deep into. But let's wrap up this conversation. So I just want to go through some general stuff, get your, you know, review, and just kind of get your take and reminders. So from my perspective, the saving piece, you know, one of the things that you brought up for us here is that, well, let's talk about the earning piece first. The earning piece is, you know, this idea that we have several different things we can think about as humans. We can think about the amount of time we have to earn. We can think about the kind of money that we have set aside that we could put into situations where we can earn more. And then we actually have our paycheck. And what I would say is that that opens up, like we humans, one of the things we have for us is we can be creative. And we talk about this idea of, forget who said it, but I don't usually like cliche statements, but I like this one. Necessity is the mother of invention. So this idea that if you need it, and you know, and you really want to do this, you can get very creative, and you can get more creative when you understand more of the angles. And so you gave us two more angles. One angle most people think about is just, what's my paycheck? But you gave us two more. How much time do I have, right? And then how much do I have set aside? I do, you know, a little bit of money that I can work with from this earning piece. So I really like that idea. Is there anything that you want us to, you know, just remind us about the earning aspect that I'm not getting there? Because there's this that idea I really like. If I have time, I can do different things. I can earn more. I can maybe be a consultant in my job. I can have a side hustle. I could start building another business. There's lots of things I can do. My brother, for example, he works, you know, for a civil engineering company, but he has honey on the side. He just bought land and he's growing bees and now he's selling his honey. So we can get creative. Each individual can begin to do that. Is there anything else we should be aware of that I'm missing on the earning side of things?
I loved what you said earlier when you mentioned like your interests or the things, you know, the things that you're into, the shows that you watch, the books that you read. Like there's clues there, you know, what does inspire you, what does light you up. And those do, yeah, I mean, it's like you're, you know, if you do like the baking show and you like to bake, well, the barrier to entry at your local farmer's market is almost nothing. I mean, you could, you know, so you could start out on a Saturday just showing up and at least getting some R&D done, right? Testing out recipes, making a little bit of money and seeing if you enjoy that, and then you can scale it from there. And so, yeah, I think, you know, and what knowledge do you have? You know, if you're, whatever you're into, whether it's, let's say it is baking, like, you use your time to acquire that knowledge that then you can monetize. And there's so many ways. It's like there's so many ways to monetize what you do know, even if it's obscure.
Yeah.
All right. There's a website. One of my favorite examples of this is, what's his name? Simon Sinek talks about the minimum viable product. Right. And so and he uses the example, there's a website for amateur magicians, not professional magicians. It's a website just specifically targeting and selling goods and stuff to people that just, they're hobbyists. The website does, I think it's over 10 million in revenue every single year.
Wow.
Just something obscure like that, kind of not light. So you know, there's people out there that are into what you're into, and you can help them, and whether it's with your time or your knowledge or your money.
Yeah, I love that idea. And then we got sort of the saving piece, which, you know, I think is really tricky because it does dovetail into debt. And so we talked about this idea of, like, you know, you want to set aside money. And psychologically speaking, once you set that money aside, that you're paying yourself first, the rest of your money, you're going to get, again, creative, you know, with how you spend that. It's going to be psychologically, you're going to be like, okay, I got $4,000 now. And I like the way you said it. You're going to be surprised. And I know this works because I know in business using the profit first model. If that's what I got, then ultimately that's what I'll spend. I just think it's psychology. If I've got $2,000 more, I'll find a way to spend that. If I got $2,000 less, I'll find a way to spend what I have. And so I think working with that psychology is really important. And then the other discussion we had there was this idea of, like, okay, sometimes when you're in debt, people won't save because they have this idea that they got to pay all their debts off first. And you're kind of helping us understand that sometimes, you know, the debt is not, it's going to be low enough interest rates where you don't want to, deal with that. So anything else around the saving piece that I'm missing?
Yeah, that pretty much covers it. I mean, when it comes to saving, I mean, really, you know, we're adaptable beings. And whether if we get a pay raise, we're going to adapt to it. If we get a pay decrease, we're going to adapt to it. And maybe if you do that method and you pay yourself first and you take that out of your five, you take one and set it aside and you're left with four, and then you adapt to it, but you're kind of like, oh, I don't really like this. Well, what's going to happen? It's going to inspire you to to get creative to make that much more money, right? So it's, you're gonna, so maybe you know, you're saving 1,000, so you went down to 4, but now you're gonna, your mind's starting to come up with ways to bring it back up to 5, and so now you're starting to build, now you're starting to grow that income even more.
Yeah, I love that. And then the final one, which I think this is where we really might want to spend more of our time next time we talk, is so the management piece is pretty tricky. It's this idea that, okay, so not only do I need to, you know, manage what I'm earning and manage, you know, savings versus debt and stuff like that, but then it really gets into how do I start making my money that I have, that I am making, that I do have saved, work for me. And I love this idea of like, okay, so financial freedom, according to you, and I love this model because, you know, I didn't think of it this way before, is that when my assets pay for my lifestyle. And so then I start thinking about, well, is this new home that I bought an asset or not? Is it going to help me pay for my lifestyle? Is that business that I'm trying to start, you know, is that going to eventually pay for my lifestyle? You know, what are the plans? And one thing that is comes up over and over again talking to you is, you know, what is the goal set, right? And who are we all listening as individuals? And so I do think I love that, because then again, it's not this idea of like, you should manage your money this way and everyone should do it this way. It's really about asking ourselves, what are our natural inclinations, likes and dislikes? What is our story? What is our risk, you know, adversity, you know, and what do we have available to us? And then that all goes into this discussion of management. But one thing you did say here towards the end that I think is something worth talking about next time is just the ins and outs of some of these things most of us won't be thinking about as it pertains to management, because most of us think of the traditional tools, and we've heard about things like gold and silver and precious metals, and maybe we even think we're investing in them, and now we're finding out you're actually perhaps not, you know, because you're investing in something else. But that idea of management, where there's these way more tools available to us that the average person that doesn't eat, live, and breathe money, you know, and understand. So any final thoughts there? And then, like, you know, let's think about where we want to go next. I personally just selfishly want to go into all the details around how do I invest in precious metals? How do I get deep into the digital currencies and all of that kind of stuff?
I think that'll be fun. Yeah. And just to tie a bow on everything, you know, and you brought up the metals, just to give people some sort of evidence. If you're curious about this metal, you know, conspiracy or whatever, like, well, you know, I've got some paper, is that not real? Look up, this came out just a few weeks ago. If you just do a Google search for JP Morgan, Department of Justice, precious metals, if you just type that in, you'll see that JP Morgan, one of the largest investment banks in the world, is being investigated by the Department of Justice in the United States for manipulating the metals market. And so you can read all about it. It's easy to find.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because a lot of people that listen to this podcast are always like, Jade, why are you always anti conspiracy theory? And I always point out to them, like, I'm not anti conspiracy theory. It's just that you have to have proof.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and you know, then, and that's what helps to have someone who really is, has their nose in all this stuff, because they can say, no, this is a real thing, and we need to be on the lookout for it. Brandon, I appreciate you, brother. Tell everybody where they can find you. One of the things that Brandon does, by the way, is he does help people manage their money. So he does have that thing. He also coaches business owners. But tell us more about how they can work with you if they want to work with you, and where to find you.
Yeah, absolutely. Best way to find me is my website, growinneroutter.com. It's got contact information for me. You can kind of get a feel on that page, you know, about, it's got our mission statement. Grow.io is the fund that I manage, is the brand that I'm building, and what I use to help coach people. And so you'll kind of see what our philosophy is there, find ways to contact me there. And then the last piece I want to share is, you know, a lot of people, another limiting belief is, well, I don't have money to invest. Mm. I don't have, you know, like we talked about earlier, time is your greatest asset, because, and why is because of the nature of compound interest. So again, start, you know, it's percentage based. It doesn't matter if you make a ton of money or not, right? It doesn't matter if you can save how much you save. It's a percentage. It's just 10% of whatever you make. Start there.
Or whatever you feel comfortable with.
Whatever it is, mm-hmm. Like, you start small, start with $100, you know, whatever it is, as small as you can, but get started, because the time in the market always beats timing the market. People get caught up trying to time the market and, oh, is this the right time? And I'm going to wait for it go because it might be a bit. Just start now, diligently, you know, automatic, ever so often, paying yourself first, because time in the market always wins.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, starting soon, reach out to myself, reach out to Jade, reach out to somebody else that you know that's into the topics, right? That does have the knowledge, and just go ahead and take that risk, because the risk of inaction is far greater than any risk in action.
Yeah. The other way you can get in touch with Brandon too, if you go on Instagram, if you follow me on Instagram, just go to who I follow and you'll find him there as well. And, you know, maybe follow him there. I don't know how much you do on Instagram. I do a lot there. Some people do, some people don't, but it always is a good place to just catch up, since a lot of people are there. I appreciate you, brother. Big love.
Big love.
Good to have you back on.
Much love, everyone.